full-time job was with the Land and Environment Court for 14 years, and since that time I sit on and chair other panels, local planning panels and the state planning panel. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon. My name is David Johnson. I'm an environmental scientist. I've been an environmental consultant for most of my career. I have also just recently finished a 6-year term on the Planning Assessment Commission, or Independent Planning Commission as it is now. Prior to that, I was an acting commissioner in the Land Environment Court. And I also sit on two other local planning panels. Thank you.
And Miss Wharton.
Hello, everyone. My name's Heather Wharton. I'm the community representative on the panel. I live in Ashfield. I'm also a town planner and I have my own consultancy, mainly to state and local government. I'm also an expert panel member on two other panels, and I'm a member of the Sydney South Regional Planning Panel. And yeah, welcome.
All right, that's the panel. Next item is declarations of interest. We only have one, namely Miss Wharton has a declaration of interest in relation to item two, the development at 5 Bruce Street, Ashfield, because she knows one of the objectors. So now we can move on to the agenda. We have a special request to deal with item number 9 first. Because one of the participants is a medical practitioner who is being called away to a medical emergency. So we will move on to item number 9, the proposed development at 57 Junior Street, Leichhardt.
I'm not even there.
What we will do is we will hear the objectors. And then we will hear from the applicant and the owner. So, Dr. Burt, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for accommodating this last minute change to the schedule. I appreciate that. I'm a resident of 55 Junior Street, and the northern boundary of my property is shared with 57 Junior Street. The proposal to develop that property is going to massively obliterate the natural light that enters into my property. So the bottom story of my property has been made into an open plan living area with the dining room and the kitchen and the living room all in continuity, and they all share this light access from an alcove that is on the northern boundary of my property and abuts onto the property of 57 Junior Street. All of the light that comes into this space, or the lion's share of the light that comes into this space, comes through this light well. And the neighbors are proposing to build a two-story high wall that totally blocks out that light well. It's going to have a really big impact on our quality of life. And we all know that light entry is really important to the quality of like the habitability of a space, for circadian rhythms, to our mental health. And it's one of the reasons why we bought this house was because it has natural light on the ground floor. It's going to affect the resale value of our property and council's revenue from that as well. The proposal development includes some shadow diagrams that I don't think accurately reflect the way the light travels through this space. We haven't been able to evaluate it on the winter solstice, but certainly in the approximately 6 months since we've been made aware of this development, we've been documenting how the light flows into that space. And it does very much come through that light well. That also is the place that we dry all of our washing in. So if we block off the light and the ventilation to that space, then it's going to have a big impact on our use of electricity for light and for drying our washing. I don't think it's just that our neighbours should be allowed to build an unlawfully large dwelling on their residence at the expense of the quality of our house and the habitability of our place, the quality of life that we have and the resale value that it has. And I think that those problems could be mitigated, both of them, both of those problems could be solved, or that their impact could be mitigated by the neighbours having a light well like our light well on their side of the boundary. If that were painted in a highly reflective paint, then it would really increase the number of days in the years that light is able to get down that space and into the bottom story of our property. So I'd appreciate it if the panel will please consider that modification to the proposed development.
All right. That's all you wish to say, I think, for the moment.
Yep.
I should remind everyone that the protocol that governs these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes. I think Dr. Burt went slightly over that, but that's all right. Thank you very much. Is Paul Burt there?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Lloyd. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you proceed.
Good.
You have 3 minutes. Yeah.
Good. My name's Paul Burt, and I jointly own 55 Junior with my daughter Genevieve. And the property in question here is the property, we're the property immediately south of number 57 Junior. And my daughter Genevieve has been living there with her family for the last 5 years, more or less. We're not opposed in principle to our neighbours developing their site. We know that the inner city is a very constrained area, but we are opposed to this particular plan. We did invite the owners of 57 and their architect to visit our place and see how their development would affect us, but they didn't take up this offer. We think this particular proposal would cause a very significant decrease in access to sunlight and fresh air at 55. The DA has photos on page 14 to 16 showing how the light well in the laundry alcove on the north of 55, our property, brings light and breeze to both stories of the house, especially to the integrated ground floor living area, the kitchen, the dining room, and the family room. Now, to function as it does, access to this light well from the northeast across the open space of 57's southern boundary is essential. Without this access to sunlight and relying solely on the vertical opening to the sky that the light well has, the interior of 55 will be greatly darkened and washing in the laundry will get almost no breeze. On the upper story of 55, the north-facing bathroom also receives a significant amount of sunlight and ventilation through this light well from the northeast, which keeps it warm, dry, and mold-free. The small third bedroom upstairs has views to the northeast and receives sunlight from that direction, making this room a very comfortable place to be. And it has been used during the COVID crisis as a home office. The overshadowing of the proposed development would greatly reduce the ambience of this area and obstruct the views to the northeast. These pleasant amenities that 55 currently enjoys will be largely lost if 57 builds its development as proposed. In addition to overshadowing us and reducing our solar access, the proposed development also exceeds the recommended floor space ratio. Our offer to work with our neighbours, their architect and council, to obtain a design that satisfies their needs and ours still stands. We would have no objection, for example, to 57 building a single-storey ground level extension closer to the rear laneway than the current eastern setback might allow, but we are strongly committed to 57 keeping the southern setback as is, since that's the route we get most of our light and fresh air.
Mr. Burt, that's your 3 minutes.
Good. That's all I want to say.
All right. Thank you for that. Now we will hear from Johnny Arching. Are you here?
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, you're very quiet. Can you turn up your volume?
Right. Can you hear me?
No, you're still very quiet.
I might just have to shout on the speaker. How do you adjust the volume here? Can you hear me at all?
That's better. Yes, proceed.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the opportunity. Do note that the gentleman, Paul Burt, did contact me several times and was very polite with the approach, but it wasn't the interest of the client to take the offer of coming over. But not saying that we haven't studied your property and the impacts, because we definitely did that. The final design was a result of three or four different designs trying to approach the maximum that we could design this at 57 with the most potential the property can offer without going too much past the FSR and the site coverage of the required requirements from council. There was a thought of reducing the upper floor, but that would mean it would push the upper floor towards the rear of the property, which would impact the privacy on the rear of 55 and 59. But that would be something council would have to approve, and it would also overshadow more the rear of the property at 55 and 59. So to keep cost at a minimum for the clients at 57, and to make sure that it's within requirements for the other requirements for privacy and for overshadowing, we had to keep the bedroom where it is, bedroom one upstairs. And it was really to expand the livability of this unit at 57, adding that bedroom and bathroom upstairs, which currently does not exist. We just to note that the double story addition, half of it is already there. It's half of the alcove overpass, the alcove is already blocked. We do understand and we do acknowledge that it will reduce the sunlight into 55 and some of the ventilation into 55. We do acknowledge that, but into keeping with the requirements of council and to maximizing the development at 57 for the clients, for the livability of the property, this is the design that we have ended up with, unless council can give us a grant of increasing our floor space ratio, then there would be a possibility of pushing that upper floor towards the rear of the property, because we're currently already over the FSR requirements.
Right. Any questions from the panel? I take it that you are the designer of this project, are you?
Yes, yes.
No questions from the panel?
No.
No? All right. Well, then we will hear from the owner, Mr. Wojtaszek, please. Mr. Wojtaszek?
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, proceed.
Great. So I just wanted to address just four key areas that have been mentioned. So the first one was around quality of life. I think we're both entitled to a quality of life and good mental health. But I think it's important that council looks at the standards and regulations and applies those to our development application, not sees them through a lens of feelings. The second element was around privacy, which was a bit confusing given that firstly, we can currently see into the Lightwell area from our ground floor alcove and from our first floor window. The approval of the DA would actually mean total privacy for number 55, as we wouldn't have any access or wouldn't actually see into the Lightwell area. Secondly, with the backyard privacy, like many other homes in our street, number 55 already has a balcony that looks onto our backyard. So our DA would simply have the same impact as they currently have on our privacy. Thirdly, in relation to the sunlight, the owners have stated that they regularly use the Lightwell for washing, but that they also use their backyard for drying their clothes. And if the clothes are constantly hanging, which we see them hanging in the light well area, they're actually blocking the window of the kitchen window anyway, most of the time. So it seems that they've been doing that since they've moved in. So that seems like a comfortable routine for them. And I noticed that in the assessment report that the direct sunlight impact was minimal, stated as minimal. The owners also have a Perspex clear roof over the light well, which breaches regulations as it actually allows rainwater to drain into our alcove and onto the shared wall that we currently share. And we actually, when we thought about the designs, we thought about 55.
Not bad.
Sorry. We thought about number 55 by not placing a window in the light well area upstairs in the first floor development. We originally had a window facing into their area. We wanted to maintain their privacy, but also they may want to renovate in the future for more floor space and get rid of the light well. So by not putting a window there, we wouldn't hinder any future development of their property. And the last thing was the property value. I think there's no evidence to suggest that their property would be devalued by our DA. People choose to live in Leichhardt and they understand that we've got, you know, terrace style living. And currently number 55 shares a common full wall with number 53. And we know that properties in Leichhardt are going up every year. So just in closing, I wanted to say that we believe that our DA application is reasonable, considered and fair for an underdeveloped inner west home, and that the floor space ratio that we're asking for is actually well below others that are in the same street or adjacent streets that have been approved by council. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel? No, no questions from the panel. All right, thank you for that. What we will do is we will consider what's been put to us and come up with a decision in due course. And we thank you all for your input. So with that, we can now move back to the agenda, the published agenda, and move on to firstly, item number one, which is a standing item, which is a report, which is for information only. Item number two is the proposed development of a residential flat building at 5 Bruce Street, Ashfield. In this matter, it is probably appropriate for us to hear from the applicant or the applicant's representative, Mr. Betros, first. I should say, however, that the panel is not satisfied that we can even consider this application because it is prohibited and the claimed existing use rights do not exist. And I can explain. On the 23rd of December 2013, the Ashfield Local Environmental Plan was published in the New South Wales legislation website and it presently continues in force, in which the land is zoned R2 low density residential, in which zone residential flat buildings are prohibited. The local environmental plan defines a residential flat building as, quote, a building containing three or more dwellings. That is, what became prohibited is any new building containing three or more dwellings. The present building does not contain three or more dwellings. It is a permissible use being what might be described as an attached dual occupancy. At no stage has it contained more than three dwellings. Therefore, it does not satisfy the definition of an existing use, which means we cannot lawfully even consider this application. So that is the view of the panel. It conforms with the submission of David Rollinson, who made a submission to that effect. So we can listen to what the applicant has to say about that. Is Mr. Betros here? Mr. Betros?
Good afternoon.
Yes.
I'll just start video as well if it's all right.
Is this Mr. Betros?
It is. Good afternoon, panel.
Yes, you've heard what I've just said.
I have, thank you. I hope you all have a copy of the agenda, which includes an attachment C, page 100.
Yes.
And that includes a memorandum of advice provided by Mr. Peter McEwen, Senior Counsel.
Yes, it is an opinion with which we do not agree.
I just wanted to draw your attention to paragraph 23 on page 109. And this specific matter of whether it be two or three has been specifically dealt with in another appeal in paragraph 25, known as J. Jenny Investments v. Mossman.
I'm familiar with that case.
I thought you would be, and I don't mean to be, I'm just referring you to that case and that this is consistent with that case.
Well, it is not. This is different. Here we have a local environmental plan that prohibits any development, any building containing three or more dwellings. That is the prohibited development. That's the difference between this matter and the case site that's cited in that opinion.
But Joe Jenny also had two flats, and it was regarded as a flat building, and the number of units wasn't relevant. And that's outlined by Mr. McEwen onwards from paragraph 25.
Yes, well, I have to tell you, it's an opinion with which we do not agree.
I'm just saying that opinion is consistent with Joe Jenny, which had two flats.
Yes, well, I'm sorry. The situation in Mossman, it's a Mossman case, is different from the situation here, where you have a specific definition of residential flat building, meaning a building containing three or more dwellings.
The same definition applies.
That's what you don't have here.
I understand that, but the same definition applied in the Mossman LEP. It was under the standard instrument at the time of Joe Jenny, and as this LEP as well.
Well, I hear what you say, but as I said, we have read Mr. McEwen's opinion and we don't agree with it.
I understand and I appreciate that, but all I can go on is the Court of Appeal decision, which dealt with the identical circumstances of two flats. And dealing with the standard instrument, which says, I understand and I agree, there's three or more apartments. Can I ask the panel respectfully, if not for that, would this application be acceptable in terms of the council's report on merit?
Well, that's something that I haven't considered. We have formed the view that we can't deal with this application because it doesn't pass the first hurdle. Because it's not an existing use as defined, and because it's a prohibited use, we can't even go any further. We can't consider this matter.
I can say the owner, or the applicant also discussed this matter with council's lawyers before purchasing. And then we undertook an exhaustive research of council's records, and that information has been accepted by council and with Mr. McEwen's advice. But I understand your opinion doesn't agree with that. So I don't think I'm going to change your mind overall.
All right. Well, then, does the architect, Mr. Jassen, wish to say anything? If not, all right, well then there are a number of speakers who wish to address us on the matter. As I said, the panel is of the view that we cannot deal with this, it's prohibited. In the light of that fact, do any of the people who wish to speak wish to persuade us to change our mind?
No, we agree with your decision. There is a lot more information from AGIPA about whether existing use rights actually exist, because we believe the family in the first instance did not intend to use it as a dual occupancy. They moved in and put in an internal staircase and used it as a house. And the electoral rolls through to 1992 show that that's the case.
All right. Well, if no one else wishes to add anything, that will be the formal determination of the panel. All right. So thank you all for your attendance, and we can move straight on to the next item, item number three. I'm sorry, Ms. Cooper? All right. Item number three, number one Macaulay Street, Leichhardt, proposed boarding house. We have Mr. Wally.
Yes.
You're all right, you're online and you have 3 minutes, Mr. Wally.
Thank you very much. I also have with me Mr. Paul Bishop, who lives in the house immediately adjacent to number one Macaulay Street. I just want to say briefly that, as you know, there were a large number of objections to this development, and it was deeply unpopular with the people in the street. As part of my previous submission, I have mentioned that there is a new incoming SEPP for affordable housing. And while you cannot take that into immediate consideration, it provides a background for the intention of new legislation. And I've just heard from Jamie Parker, MP, that it's likely that the new legislation is going to be surfacing in 3 to 4 weeks' time. This would mean that these developments will have to be done by registered not-for-profit community service provider. So this application would not be allowed in the first place. And specifically, the lack of affordability in such establishments basically means that if this development was aiming at low affordability, it has a false premise initially. Apart from that, and I don't have time to say any more than that, I recognise that the modifications before the panel represent considerable improvement on the original proposal, and importantly, that the number of rooms should be no more than the 6 rooms, now individual rooms, proposed, and that no further additional rooms should be added. I have one suggestion for the proprietor, perhaps, with respect to health and safety in the time of pandemic, with a population of unrelated individuals in communal bathrooms and kitchens, that it could be not unreasonable to require that incoming lodgers show proof of a COVID virus vaccine. Thank you. And I must pass on briefly to my friend Paul Bishop for a few words. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, I'm trying to be brief here. There are conditions that are recommended for approval, and I guess I'm very keen to understand that these conditions and the accepted. The three I note are no more than 6 rooms. The fact that it cannot be subdivided at some point in the future. And also there's some constraints around the eligibility of parking being written into conditions.
Sorry, who's speaking?
Paul Bishop.
My neighbour of the house.
I made an objection. I somehow didn't manage to register for this meeting.
Well, then we can't hear you.
Okay.
We can't hear you. We have a written objection from Mr. Wally, who has spoken, and he is the only registered speaker, and he is the only person who has provided us with a written statement.
Yes. Okay. Conditions.
So, Mr. Wally,
we're happy that the conditions that you are recommending will be applied.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wally.
Thank you.
All right. Now, Mr. Georges, is Mr. Georges there? I'm sure he must be. Is there no sign of Mr. Georges? We do have a written statement from him. He is the proponent or the applicant.
Is anyone there? Hello?
He's online.
Hello?
Mr. Georges?
Yes, hello, Simon, yes. The applicant?
Yes, all right, you proceed.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. I'm just going to share my screen if I may. Host has disabled participant screen sharing. Am I able to share
Mr.
my screen?
Mr. Chair, I need your permission to allow him to share if you like.
What is this, Mr. Georges? We have your written statement. What do you now wish to do?
Okay, so there is a recommendation to reduce the number of rooms from 7 to 6.
Yes.
And within the conditions that are proposed to be applied, there was a recommendation to convert bedroom 5, which abuts the kitchen, as a bulky goods storage room and an additional bathroom. Now, the plan that I wish to submit to or share the screen with shows an alternative in lieu of unnecessarily reducing the number of bedrooms from 7 to 6. We can accommodate the bulky wood storage room within the carport at the rear, as well as the bike storage that's required. So the plan obviously is to retain the 7 rooms in lieu of the 6. The additional bathroom is not a statutory requirement, as I understand it. Currently, the dwelling has 2 bathrooms, one on the ground floor and one on the first floor. And as part of an alternative, we can also provide, if need be, an additional bathroom on the first floor where the media area is, if the panel sees it more appropriate, even though it's not required. So the owners obviously need to make this development feasible. They are in discussions, as I understand it, with the Uniting Church to be able to provide this for the affordable housing scheme. They are in discussions. It's not guaranteed at the moment. Obviously, to make this a feasible development, the 7 rooms would be more beneficial than 6, given that we provide all the requirements under the Act in terms of living space, parking, bulky goods storage, and so on. So the client has requested that we ask you for your reconsideration on that basis. And the reasons why I suppose there would be a restriction from 7 to 6, my only guess is that they saw bedroom 5 as the only place to apply the bulky wood goods storage. If we had the opportunity to have that discussion with the planner prior, then we could have provided them with the amended plan that shows the bulky goods storage at the rear of the carport.
Georges? Mr. Georges, you are proposing to rely on an amended plan which will incorporate the changes that you've just outlined, including internal changes to the building itself. If you want to rely upon this amended plan, the matter will have to be deferred because it will then have to be the subject of a fresh assessment report, which means we can't deal with the matter today.
Right, and when you say deferred, is it a deferred commencement?
No.
Or just deferred? Okay.
So deferred for a further assessment report.
Right, okay. I did have, I've got Vanessa. I know that Vanessa, one of the owners, is online. Vanessa, I'm not sure if you can hear me. If the panel could request her instructions, would be nice. Vanessa Saad, is she available?
Yep, I'm here. I've unmuted.
Okay, Vanessa, you heard the panel. I did speak to your husband today and he was of the opinion that if it was a deferred commencement approval, then yeah, good and great. But if it was a deferral completely, it would be something that you would prefer to avoid. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. David, we would under that instruction, we would much prefer the panel to determine the application as is, and then obviously we will seek the other means via, I suppose, the section 4.55 to have those conditions reconsidered under that process. But you
Yes, you can always apply for a modification.
Yeah, and no doubt we will. So we look forward to the recommendations of approval, and I understand that you can't make a decision on the spot, and we'll keep an eye online to see what that final determination is.
Chair, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Do you have any objection to providing more parking, more bicycle parking and motorbike parking, in lieu of the fact that the parking is deficient? I recognise that it is in a well-served area, but nonetheless, additional bicycle and motorbike parking would be appropriate.
May I respond?
Yes.
Okay, so in the amended plan, we obviously took a look at to see whether or not we can comply with those conditions of consent. And the amended plan actually shows the required car space and a motorcycle space, as well as two Class B bicycle storage units that sit one on top of the other. I think in the submission that I'd provided within my response to the panel did show that standard detail. It is a off-the-shelf unit that you can purchase. So it does accommodate two lockable storage units. In the event that council obviously seek to apply the conditions of consent with regards to the bulky goods storage room number, the deletion of bedroom 5 for a bulky goods storage room, then there will be availability for some additional locker units for bicycle parking. But at the moment, it currently can achieve those requirements. And okay. I must mention that we obviously are well connected with public transport networks. We're close to...
Yes, I noted that.
Yeah, you did. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's all I have, Chair.
All right. Ms. Wharton has a question about the fence.
Yeah, I thought I read somewhere in the report that the fence was proposed to be colourblind, but I couldn't see that second time round. There are a number of conditions asking for changes to the materials. I think there's a requirement to delete the off-form concrete, to delete the I-beam steel, is it? Yeah, the steel I-beam fencing and so on, and to change the fencing material of the front, at the front elevation. I just want to check with the applicant that they are happy to go along with those conditions in terms of more traditional materials for the finishes for the proposal.
May I respond? It's Mr. George is here.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Heather, for bringing that up. I'm not sure you've been aware, David, our submission was a three-pager, close to four, with some diagrams that we're hoping to convey some of the other conditions that we had some issues with. Obviously, that steel beam acts as a girder that a track system that allows the panel door to be able to slide rather than using a panel lift door. Now, the problem with using a panel lift door, the panel lifts aren't very pleasant to the eye. This being Norton Street, we wanted to apply the heritage guidelines with respect to contemporary contrasting development, So we've respected and retained the existing character of the building and the primary form. And then there's this distinct link, semi-detached link of the contemporary form. And I would very much love to see the development maintain the design, and I'm assuming you've seen the 3D perspectives and the photography that was provided that showed all the perspectives of the finishes. I'm not sure if you've seen that submission, which was part of the original submission or the amended submission.
We do have a sheet in our
yes. Yes, but not quite. You didn't see the 3D perspectives. May I have the permission to share my screen?
And these, I can show you. We have these.
Yes, they are it.
Yeah, we have those.
Okay, perfect. So what we wanted to do is to retain the steel I-beam in the language of the contemporary form, rather than putting a paling fence, which would disrupt the contrasting contemporary element or the section that we're trying to contrast against the primary character form. So the heritage guidelines are quite specific. They prefer to see that contrast. And I think introducing a traditional material in a traditional manner in the contemporary section of it will only confuse the casual observer. This being Norton Street, we're obviously going to quite some high detail to make sure that this looks right for the streetscape and the community, rather than try and mimic the past and do it badly. So, and that's part of the reason why we would have preferred the deletion of that other condition that requests a separate door within that wall, which is unnecessary and it's not a requirement. And in fact, the door to the vehicle parking can still provide the access to the rear yard anyway, and we would prefer to minimise the elements within the Norton Street frontage, just to make it a little softer on the eye, rather than having too many doors on that facade. Does that answer your question?
Yep, I understand what your view is on that. Thank you.
All right. Well then, thank you for your input there. We will consider this matter and, as with the previous matter, publish our decision in due course.
May I ask a couple more questions if it's possible? My clients tried to register, but they couldn't obviously register in time. There was a condition that talks about the front fence to be replaced with the traditional or the picket fencing to be replaced.
Yes.
I would recommend that the fence at the moment is the existing fence that's there. I think I supplied a photo as well, and I'm happy to share that. If that condition could just state to retain the existing fence as is, because it is the former front fence that was constructed with the building at the time of construction.
All right, that's noted.
Okay.
Anything else?
There was a couple other things. I note that there was a request to relocate the rainwater tank to an above ground rainwater tank along the eastern boundary. Sorry, along the side boundary, not the northern boundary, but the other one. We had submitted a stormwater design prepared by a certified hydraulic engineer that showed at a below ground rainwater tank within the central light well that faces the Norton Street frontage. It is unnecessary for us to provide an above ground system. It would be unsightly. It would reduce our deep soil planting, where we would prefer to put some plantings, which I'm sure the adjoining neighbour would prefer to see some plants along that side to provide a bit of an acoustic buffer and some greenery, rather than, you know, putting an above ground rainwater tank up against the fence. So there's no reason why the original submitted engineering stormwater design could not be applied. I'm not asking for your answer. I know it's something you'll probably need to review. So there's that. What was the other thing? The steel beam we spoke about, the front fence we spoke about, the storage bedroom 5 we spoke about, and I think that was it.
All right. Any further questions from the panel? No? All right. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Cheers.
The next item is item number 4, the proposed boarding house at 53 Bruce Street, Stanmore. And we should have Mr. Robert Lees on the line. Is Mr. Lees, here we are. Mr. Lees, I see your name has come up. Are you available?
Mr. Chair, he's just on mute.
You're on mute, Mr. Lees. No, you're on mute. Mr. Lees,
that's fixed that.
That's fixed. All right. As I said before, you have 3 minutes. We do have your written submission, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, I'm just going over the same points as made in the written submission. I believe, 11 of my neighbours have also submitted objections to this development. I suppose the one addressing the requirements is that it doesn't meet the parking requirements. It only provides 3 general parking spaces where it's required to have 5. This is a development of 9 self-contained units for a maximum of 12 people. I believe there'll be more cars than that. And parking is an issue around here as we're so close to the station by 8 o'clock on a normal morning, not so much now with COVID. The streets are totally parked out. On the other issues, I noted that this is an R2 low density area. And typically the houses for 1 to 6 people, ranging from children to grandparents. This is a development in the same space to contain 12 people. I believe it's out of character with the general character of the neighbourhood as being part of the Annandale Farm Heritage Conservation Area. I note that they are keeping the facades, but essentially the building is going to be gutted. It'll lose all its other features. It'll have the front of it and the front roof. Other than that, it'll be a completely new build. I also note that while it complies with the statutory minimum of living space, for 12 people, 27 square metres is a very small shared amount of space. It's about 2 square metres. And in COVID, we've been using 4 square metres as an adequate amount of space to stop infection. So post-COVID, I believe these types of developments, which are just a very small sleeping space and a very small living space for the number of people there, are a very bad development. What you take is a standard house in the area is about 50-50. You have about 50% space devoted to bedrooms and about 50% of the space devoted to living areas. In this development, it's about 82% to bedroom space and 18% to living space. So the people who will be the tenements have to live in their bedrooms. Essentially, there's not much other space for them. I suppose the only other thing I wanted to note was while I see the noise insulation is specified for railways, this area was done over under the John Howard aircraft noise insulation, which was done to a much higher standard than is statutorily required and is much better insulation. So these people will have a lesser insulation than the other neighbours in the area. And while it's quiet now, with the airport working normally, it can get quite noisy at the high intensity times.
Mr. Lees, that's your 3 minutes.
Good, I've finished. Thank you.
Well, as I said, we do have your written submission. Any questions from the panel? No, no, no. Everyone's shaking their heads. All right. Okay. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
As with the other matters, we will consider it and publish our decision in due course. So with that, we can move on to item number 5, 10 Cambridge Street, Enmore. This is the proposed secondary dwelling on top of a garage facing Cavendish Street. We have a number of people who wish to address us on this. Firstly, is Nigel White here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
All right. The ball's in your court.
Okay. I thought perhaps Robert might have been our first speaker, but that's fine.
No, that's all right. We happen to listen to whoever wants to go first. We notice there's three speakers. Who wishes to go first?
Well, I might. Can you hear me? It's Robert Wiltshire here.
Yes.
You can?
Yes, you're the owner?
Yes, I'm one of the owners. I'm here with my wife, Karen.
Yes, you proceed.
I may come and proceed first.
Yes.
Firstly, I just wanted to thank the panel and the council for their support during this time. It's been going on for almost 2 years now, so we've had some good support there, and we've appreciated all the comments that we've had in respect to making sure we can get something that's approved by you, being the panel, and also the council eventually. So just to give a bit of background, which I've already mentioned in my written statement, it's Robert here and Karen, my wife. We've been the owners here for some 12 years. It's an old property. It was built somewhere around the 1904 time. It was actually before we bought it. It was a boarding house, so it was in massive disrepair right through the whole property. We improved on all that and made sure that we not just had a livable property, but also improved the property dramatically, both inside and outside. We have some popular murals which have been commissioned by us on the exterior walls. There's two of them. We have a lot of people stopping by with not only their kids, but through just walking past our property that stop and actually photograph that. So we're very proud of that. And in part of the extension that we're planning here, or the new garage facility, we wanted to actually extend that through the garage area and onto the new walls that we're proposing to build. Currently we have tags and very ugly and often pornographic graffiti that's not just on our house, but certainly on the current garage and many other areas around us. So the murals are not just there to enhance the property, but certainly to try and get rid of those graffiti guys that disrespect us continually. We have for some time been concerned about our garage, not just because of its safety and dilapidated appearance, but also because it does contain some parts of it that are made of asbestos. So over a period of 2 or 3 years, we've decided to, one, to rebuild that garage and add a further floor above that for our son, who was originally in university, now he's a teacher, and was looking to live outside the property or outside the main house and actually occupy that dwelling above the garage so he could have access in and out, and being 25-year-old, have run his own life to some degree without the exorbitant costs of finding another place to live. One of the things that we've been understanding of is the many changes and requests of the council. We've tried to work with not just Nigel and our builders constantly to improve the dwellings and the building to fit with the council requirements. We also felt that it was something that we could improve our property and enhance our living space and provide extra facilities for all of us. One of the things that we've been concerned about, and council also, was the streetscape. We actually don't understand how we don't fit that streetscape. We've made multiple changes on a constant basis, and Nigel will actually give you a little bit more a basis of that, but we believe we've tried to fit in very dramatically, considering the current garage is not in good shape at all, and it looks terrible with the graffiti and everything else all over it. So that was something really important.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay. We just noted that, there was a couple of objections, but we did...
They're not objections.
They're not objections, they're just concerns, and we said that we can give them access to the sewerage. Of course, that's no problem at all with us. Is all that right. Okay?
Mr. White.
Thank you. As the planner assisting Robert, I feel this should be approved, not refused, this application. At the end of the day, we're really looking at upper level, which seems to be the issue to council, that is at some 40-odd square metres. We've tried to set it back a little further with an amended application. It's basically a low-profile building with a flat roof. It's actually lower than all the buildings surrounding it. So I'm a bit miffed as to why it's a streetscape issue. We're looking to upgrade the actual fencing and security around the structure. And we're removing, as Robert pointed out, a dilapidated building. With regard to floor space, we acknowledge that it's exceeding the FSR. We've submitted a clause 4.6, which I feel reasonably justifies the breach, the FSR. We're dealing with a R2 zone with a very low FSR and not represented by other buildings in the street, as we produced a plan to try and justify that. In the context, we feel that the FSR is reasonable. And in the context of this site, which has a building that's actually located in the point of the property, it's an old building with some character. There's some space at the rear, and it makes good sense to actually take advantage of building over the garage structure. As Robert pointed out, it's for the family, it's providing affordable housing opportunities, and it's utilising a space in an appropriate manner. With regard to the zoning, that we feel that it's low density zoning, the building's permissible, it's a garage and a secondary dwelling. I understand you've got my submission, so I won't go through that, but at the end of the day, we feel the clause 4.6 is justified, well structured, and it's just an innocuous building that will fit in well with the streetscape. The application should be approved.
Any questions from the panel? No questions? Yes? You're on mute.
Yep. I suppose I was just looking at the built forms around, and it seems that, that the predominance of pitched roofs, et cetera, was that discussed with council at all, yes. Mr. White or Mr. Wilshire?
Yes, we originally had a pitched roof, and council were of the opinion that we should make it flat.
So we've made it flat. We changed it.
We originally wanted a pitched tiled roof. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I just thought that would be more in keeping with the streetscape.
I agree as well.
So did we.
Yeah, but we were asked to change it to flat.
Okay. So it was actually the original plan that was submitted was a pitched roof, was it?
That's right.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, panel?
Could I just ask about the clause 4.6 to Mr. White? The environmental planning grounds. How would you describe your environmental planning grounds to justify the breach in the FSR?
Well, I've done that in the clause 4.6 already. I could read them out to you again if that's what.
I mean, I've got it in front of me, but I can't see the environmental planning grounds in your submission.
Well, it simply doesn't affect any environmental circumstance. There's no tree removal, there's no overshadowing impacts, there's no streetscape impacts, there's no privacy impacts. It's actually a built form above a garage structure which council would ordinarily approve. So there are no environmental issues arising from approving this second story.
Okay, I don't know if that's quite the same thing as environmental planning ground, but and the other thing is the council in the report at page 275 refers to your submission about other FSRs in the street, and they make some comments along the lines of that you've included some, I think they refer to your table, this table here.
Yes.
Yeah. They make a comment along the lines of that you've included some FSRs that aren't really relevant because there's a sliding scale that applies to smaller lots and so on, and you've included some residential flat buildings and so on. Do you have any comments in response to the council's assertions there?
I think there's the parts of the LEP have certain areas with the sliding scale. I'm not sure whether it applies to this part of the LEP for the R2 zone, but I'll stand corrected if I haven't double checked that.
May I just add one thing, Nigel?
Yes.
Council panel, we do have two blocks. We own two blocks. The house is on one block, and this proposed garage and dwelling is on the second block. We have an extensive backyard that will not be touched as it is being built on the same footprint relatively as what is there now. Our backyard in the second block is bigger than a lot of places around us.
It's all garden.
It's all garden. Thank you.
Yeah.
But just to clarify, Mr. White, the FSR was worked out on both lots though, I presume?
Yes, it was.
Right.
Thank you.
So in fact, if it was just on the one lot, if it was just on its own self-contained lot, it would be far below the FSR.
Correct.
Sorry, it's actually one allotment, but the double block in terms of street numbering. I think that's what Karen's referring to.
Okay, right.
So it is one lot.
Yeah, it's lot one in DP 940038.
492.3 square metres.
492.3 square metres, yes.
Okay. And just one other question, sorry. The application, I noticed, was submitted in November. So has there been much dialogue between you and the council assessing officer in that period?
Yes. Well, we've submitted an amended plan in response to a request for additional information. But prior to that, Robert and Karen did attend a pre-lodgement meeting with council, so the dialogue started well before the application was submitted. And we've done what we can to produce a modest building in that space.
This is a third submission.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, panel? If not, no? All right. I also have a note here that Mr. James Brennan wishes to speak. Is Mr. Brennan here? No.
Yes, he should be. He told me he was.
He said he was online.
All right. Is Mr. Brennan online, please?
He's actually trying to connect to you. He's doing it from Orange or Wagga or somewhere.
Well,
you haven't got him?
No.
It looks like we don't have him. He is your builder, I understand.
Correct.
Yes. He probably hasn't got much.
He's saying, can't you hear me? I'm just calling him now.
He's on mute. He's on the line.
I see him there.
He's on mute. Can you, James? I'm phoning you, James. I've got you on speaker, but you're on mute.
No, I'm listening. I can hear everybody.
Okay, we're going to hold you up to the speaker, so hopefully they can hear you, James.
Yeah, okay. No, I can hear everybody. I've heard everything that was discussed.
Okay, do you want to speak?
I'm listening in. I don't know why it's not letting me. You guys can't hear me.
Are you able to speak now?
Can the panel hear him?
No, we can't. I cannot hear Mr. Brennan.
I can hear him.
Everybody.
Okay, do you want to speak, James?
Yeah, can you hear me, Karen?
Yeah, I can. One of the panel members can. I'm not sure about the others, but go ahead.
I can just hear him.
Go ahead.
Sorry, everybody. I'm in the middle of Coonabarra Burn at the moment.
Okay, go ahead, James.
Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
So everybody, I've heard everything that was discussed. I believe that both Mr. Wilshire and Nigel White have covered off on most of the concerns. The only attributes I wish to add is my full support is behind both Mr. and Mrs. Wilshire. The application itself, I don't feel, is out of line with a lot of the buildings that I've managed to build over the course of the last 15 years. I believe that Mr. and Mrs. Mushi are a full supporter of the local community and of the local scape that is out there. I believe that they don't wish to intentionally upset anybody by their submission in any way, shape or form. So therefore, I feel that the application should be approved, both on the grounds that Mr. Robert Mushi has suggested and also Mr. Nigel White.
All right. Did the panel hear that?
Yes. Yep.
All right, we heard that. All right.
Lost you, James.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
thanks,
Pat.
James. Thank you.
All right. Well, then that deals with that item, which, as before, we will consider what's been put to us and come up with a decision in due course. And thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, panel.
Thank you, Nigel. Thank you, James.
All right. Next is item number 6. This is 5 at 193 Darling Street, Balmain. This is a change of use from commercial to residential, recommended for approval. We have Tom Willis, the architect, on the line.
Yes.
Is Mr. Willis here?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Do the panel have any questions of Mr. Willis?
No questions from me.
No.
Mr. Willis, are you happy with the recommendations?
Nothing from me either.
Yes, we're happy with the recommendations and support the gift of consent.
All right. Well, then, there being no objection, that will be the decision of the panel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Next, we come to item number 7, 14 Llewellyn Street, Balmain. No one is registered to speak on this matter. Alterations and additions to an existing dwelling, recommended for approval, no objections. And I don't know if anyone from the owner or applicant is here, but the panel is disposed to adopt the recommendation. And there being no objections, that will be the determination of the panel. So we can now move on to item number 8. Item number 8 is, if I can find it, 229 Darling Street. This is the alterations and additions to an existing restaurant. The additions comprising two residential apartments. Is anyone here on that matter? It's been recommended for approval. There are no objections to it. All right. So the panel will then adopt that recommendation for approval subject to conditions. Next is item number 9, which we have already dealt with that first. We then come to item number 10, 20 Montague Street, Balmain. Alterations and additions to an existing dwelling. We have Mr. Woods, architect, here for the applicant. Any questions? Is Mr. Woods there, please? Mr. Woods? It's been recommended for approval. Again, there are no objections to it.
I think that's item 11, David.
Item 11. I'm sorry. Yes. We dealt with that one. Item 11, Mr. Woods.
Mr. Woods is unable to make the video link, but I can speak on his behalf as one of the architects for COSO Architecture, and we support Council's recommendation for approval.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
No.
No questions. All right. Thank you. We will then adopt the recommendation for approval, so subject to the recommended conditions.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So that deals with all the items in the public meeting. So we can close the public meeting and we will then deliberate privately on each application.
I'll let you know when we're clear.